That was Palace of Light from their album Beginning Here and Travelling Outward from 1986 or 7. And playing guitar on that was Mark Brend, who's with us in the studio. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Stuart. How you doing?
Thanks for coming.
Pleasure.
Now, what's it like hearing that again?
It's a bit weird, actually. I don't listen to it much, and I've never heard it on the radio before, that's for sure. But
Sorry, it's okay. To unsettle you.
I'll cope with it.
All right. But now you're, as well as being in Farina, that's the band you're in at the moment, you're... a writer, and your last book was this American Troubadours, look at the 60s American singer-songwriters.
Yeah, it wasn't quite the last one, actually. There was another one just after it.
Oh, what was the one after it?
It was about Lowell George.
Oh, right, I'm behind.
Sank without trace, I'm afraid. But, yeah, so American Troubadours is about the American singer-songwriter movement of the 60s, not just Greenwich Village, actually. It was Greenwich Village or Elektra Records. That was my criteria. And if people were either on the Greenwich Village scene or signed to Elektra, they were in, and I had to like them as well.
Yeah, that's what it was, your book.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And how did you end up being drawn to that whole setup?
I don't know. I mean, like a lot of people, there came a time when I sort of came across Bob Dylan, like Bob Dylan, looked around for other people, found Leonard Cohen, and then just started to look further and realised there was a whole number of singer-songwriters who weren't so well-known, although sometimes their songs are very well-known, but they weren't so well-known, and there's just some great music there, and music that was very influential in its time, but the artists themselves are largely forgotten, so I started to dig around and discover some of them.
Yeah, although actually since that came out, a lot of the people you mentioned in it, like that David Blue album, you couldn't find that anywhere apart from secondhand for £50 on vinyl, and now it's out on CD. Do you think that the book prompted more reissues and availability of all that music?
I hope it did. I like to think it did to some extent. I mean, of course, you get the thing with CDs that more and more stuff is being reissued, never mind how obscure it was. But I think in some cases, like Tim Rose and David Blue, who you mentioned, have had quite a few reissues since the book, and I think that was indirectly connected with it, yeah.
Right. And when you talk about following Dylan through and then seeing that all the other people that were antecedents of him or part of the same scene.
Yeah.
Did you have that terrible feeling that it could go on forever?
Absolutely. And it almost does. And one of the main responses that I got from the book was people coming back to me and saying, yeah, it's fine, but why wasn't so-and-so in? Why wasn't so-and-so in? And really, I haven't got an answer for it. I just chose the 9 people that I happened to like the most and I thought were most interesting. But, the ripples just go on and on.
What are the 9 that actually were in it?
Right. David Eccles, David Blue, Tim Buckley, Tim Hardin, Fred Neil, Phil Oakes, Tom Rapp, Tim Rose and Tom Rush.
We've got a Phil Oakes track lined up that you chose. Which one is this?
It's a track called Crucifixion from Phil Oakes' first Elektra record, released in 1967.
Well, let's have a listen to this.
pounds again to the circle-studded sky. The stars settle slowly in loneliness they lie, till the universe explodes as a falling star is raised. Planets are paralyzed, mountains are amazed, but they all glow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity, then he died. In the green fields of turning, baby is born. His cries crease the wind and mingle with the morn. An assault upon the order, the changing of the guard, chosen for a challenge that is hopelessly hard. And the only single sign is the sighing of the stars, but to the silence of distance they are sworn. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 cause we love you. Images of innocence charging to go on, but the decadent's destiny is looking far upon. Nightmare of knowledge, he opens up the gate. Blinding revelation is laid upon his plate, that beneath the greatest love is a hurricane of hate. And God help the critic of the dawn. So he stands on the sea and he shouts to the shore, but the louder that he screams, longer he's ignored. For the wine of oblivion is drunk to the dregs, and the merchants of the masses almost have to be begged. Till the giant is aware someone's pulling at his leg, and someone is tapping at the door. To dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, dance, cause we love you. Then his message gathers meaning and it spreads across the land. The rewarding of his fame is the following of the man. But ignorance is everywhere and people have their way. Success is an enemy to the losers of the day. In the shadows of the churches, who knows what they pray? For blood is the language of the band. The Spanish bulls are beaten, the crowd is soon to gone. The matador is beautiful, a symphony of style. Excitement is ecstatic, passion plays his best. Gracefully bows to ovations that he gets. But the hands that are plodding are slippery with sweat, and saliva is falling from their smile. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. In this overflow of life is crushed into a liar. The gentle soul is ripped apart, tossed into the fire. First a smile of rejection at the nearness of the night. Truth becomes a tragedy, limping from the light. All the heavens are horrified, they stagger from the sky. as the crosses trembling with desire. They say that can't read it, it's a sacrilegious shame. Now who would want to hurt such a hero of the game? But you know, I predicted it, I knew he had a fall. How did it happen? Oh, the suffering was small. Tell me every detail, for I've got to know it all. And do you have a picture of pain? So dance, dance, dance. Teach us to be true. Come dance, dance, dance. Cause we love you. Time is old, memory fades. But his glory is growth in the magic that he made. Reality is ruined, it's the freeing from the fear. Drama is distorted, what they want to hear. Swimming in their sorrow and the twisting of a tear, as they wait for the new thrill parade. Yes, the eyes of the rebel and branded by the blind. To the safety of sterility, the threat has been refined. The child was created, to the slaughterhouse he's led. So good to be alive when the eulogies are read. Climax of emotion, the worship of the dead, at the cycle of sacrifice unwinds. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 cause we love you. The circle studded sky, the stars sail slowly in loneliness their light, till the universe explodes and falling stars rage. Planets are paralyzed, mountains are amazed, but they all glow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity, then die.
That was a bit like Chaucer,
Crucifixion. That was a song, a sort of allegorical song about the first Kennedy assassination. And that was recorded, that was the first Electric album that Phillips recorded, and just a few months before he'd been an acoustic folky, and then that happened.
And what was that? What did happen?
He, like a lot of people who came out of folk music, wanted, after a while, found the scene a little bit restrictive, both politically and musically. It was a sort of scene where this is what happened to Dylan. If you started to sing about subjects that weren't in the folk canon, you were dismissed as being wrong somehow. It was a very narrow-minded thing, and Phil Oakes experienced that, and he just wanted to do something different musically and lyrically, and that's what he came up with.
Right. And would that have at that stage, would that have attracted the same amount of aggression as Dylan's Going Electric did?
It did on a smaller scale, I mean, because Oakes was a smaller figure, although after Dylan went electric, Phil Oakes was briefly elected by the sort of folk purist as being their new young statesman.
Was he the first of the new Dylans?
I think he was, really, yeah. But he didn't like being a new Dylan, and he sort of ditched that after a few months. And, so he offended quite a few people with that record, and actually lost his audience, really, because he had a folk audience and he lost it, and he never really got a pop or a rock audience or whatever you'd like to call it.
Did a sort of strange kind of... What happened to him in the end? Didn't he come back as some kind of rock and roll, tried to make a rock and roll album, and then...
Yeah, he had this idea that if the youth revolution was ever to take off in the States, and he really believed, you know, in the idea of the counterculture taking over, that the leader would have to be a cross between Elvis Presley and Che Guevara. So he got himself a gold lame suit like Elvis used to wear, and started to do a rock and roll set that preached quite extreme radical politics in between songs, and didn't really get an audience for that either. No.
Right. But all the people in the book, though, a lot of them that you write about, they are very individual voices, and it's weird to think of them coming out of a scene where there were rules and regulations about you have to play things that are in the folk canon in a particular style.
Yeah.
How do they all get from being part of that fairly dogmatic setup into the individual voices you get, like Tim Buckley or David Ackles or whatever?
I think it was a lot to do with Dylan. I mean, Dylan did blaze a lot of trails, but there was also so much happening in sort of 65, 66, which was the period when people started to think we want to do a bit more than folk music. There was so much interesting stuff going on, so much great stuff in the charts that was musically quite interesting, and people were affected by that, and they wanted to do it. Interestingly, virtually all of them, although they became folkies, had started before that with a great love of first-generation rock and roll. Most of the people in the book loved Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, and so that wanting to do something with a bit more bite to it was always there, I think.
Right, should we have a listen to a David Ackles track? I think we've got one queued up.
Yep.
Which one's this?
This is Down River from David Ackles' first album. This is David Ackles is an interesting guy because although his songs aren't well known and he isn't well known, he's been very influential. A lot of current musicians and a lot of quite big names, including Elton John and Phil Collins, really rate him, weirdly. So does Elvis Costello and Nick Cave, I think, as well. He's a great guy.
All right, this is Down River. Is it by David Ackles?
To see you again, Rosie. I know I've changed a lot since then, but you're looking fine, babe. 3 years, that ain't long, Rosie. I still remember our song when you were mine. Times change, I know, but it sure goes slow. Down river, when you're locked away. Hey, why didn't you write, Rosie? I stayed awake most every night, counting my time, babe. Oh no, I ain't mad, Rosie. I know you had to mind your dad, but just a line, babe. Oh sure, I remember Ben, why we went all through school. Is that right? Well, he ain't no fool. He's a good man, Rosie. You hold him tight as you can. Don't ask me why, babe. Yeah, nice seeing you, Rosie. Me, I got things to do. Times change, I know, but it sure goes slow. Down river, when you're locked away.
That was David Ackles and Dan River from the 1968 album. It's called David Ackles, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And you think that's one of your favourites from the American Troubadours book?
Yeah, that is my favourite album of all time, actually. Right. I think David Ackles is an enormous talent. Who I can understand why he wasn't successful in some ways, because a lot of his songs were about pretty unpalatable subjects like prostitution and mental illness. So from a radio point of view, he probably was never going to get any hits, but enormously talented man. And not just a piano player and a singer and a songwriter, but he wrote all the orchestrations as well.
Oh,
a great guy.
There's a great guitar on the fade of that.
Yes, really? Yeah. That was a guy called Doug Hastings, I think, who had some connection with Buffalo Springfield later on.
Yeah, and his name seems familiar now you mention it. He turns up on all those sort of, the small print on lots of albums.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Have any of the people you wrote about that are still with us been in touch with you? I mean, Tom Rapp, yeah, from Pearls Before Swine, you said.
Yeah. When I started writing the book, four of them were alive, and only two are now.
You feel responsible for that?
not entirely. It is definitely a high-risk profession. You know, an awful lot of these guys didn't make it into their 40s. Tim Rose died last year, and he spent his last years living in London. I saw quite a bit of him.
Yeah.
And he was a nice guy. He'd had a reputation when he was younger of being very belligerent and aggressive, but happy to say that was all gone by the time I met him.
Mm.
Tom Rapp is around. He's a lawyer. Lives in Florida now, I think. A really nice guy.
Yeah, but he always does the same. He always tells the same anecdote.
He does.
Standing in a lift at Elektra Records.
He's got some familiar stories. He also, if you ask him questions, you know, in an interview situation, he's got answers off pat, because I've seen other interviews that people have done where they've asked the same question as me, and the answers he gave them were almost identical to the answers he gave me.
Yeah. I did a piece on John Fay before he died, obviously, and then loads of people sent me emails saying you plagiarised that from Edwin Pounce's piece in The Wire, and I realised that basically there's about 100 questions you're going to ask John Fay, and he's been asked them all for 40 years, and he knows exactly how to answer them with exactly the same phrasing and pauses. Yeah. And not only that, but in his book, How Bluegrass Music Destroyed My Life, or whatever it's called, he basically has written them down in prose, and, you know, it was difficult to get anything more out of them, you know, and you do hit that kind of wall with people where you're retreading sorts of things. But if you're writing a book like American Troubadours, where you're introducing fairly obscure figures in an accessible form, then you need to go over that kind of ground again, don't you?
You do, yeah. And also, I mean, some people, and David Ackles is a case in point, was so forgotten for so long that nobody had interviewed him for 20 years, so he didn't have the answers off pat, and it all felt quite fresh, and all sorts of revealing stuff came out.
Well, there, you said earlier on that there were people saying, why didn't you include this person, why didn't you include this person? What were some of the people that... Who would have been number 10 by public response?
Probably a more country-orientated figure like Townes Van Zandt.
Right.
And I'm a huge fan of Townes Van Zandt, but I didn't include him specifically because it just felt different. When Townes Van Zandt wanted to make it, he went to Nashville. These guys either went to the West Coast to Elektra, or they went to Greenwich Village, so it feels different. There are a couple of kind of lesser figures. There's a guy whose name has just gone from the top of my head, a bald chap who wears a hat all the time.
That's great. You can just forget them yourself. Yeah, that means they're really out there.
P.F. Sloan was another one.
Right.
And I saw that you had a P.F. Sloan record down there that maybe we could spin in a minute. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was... He's an interesting man, but I didn't think he was somehow quite the real thing.
He's an opportunist.
Yes, exactly, who would wear all sorts of hats whenever the mood took him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if I was to do it again, I'd stick with the same nine. Possibly Eric Anderson would be one I'd add. He's another Greenwich Village person, and made some great albums, but very unknown.
Is he still alive, Eric?
He's still alive, I think, and he lives in Norway.
Right. Oh, well, maybe there'll be a mushrooming Norwegian Greenwich Village revival scene. Did you go to New York and look at any of those plays? Because I was there earlier this year, and you walk past those venues, and of course they're all just little cafes now or whatever, but just the names of the places, they have a real resonance as you go past.
Yeah, no, I didn't. The budget didn't stretch for that. I would have loved to. But of course, most of them are... not what they were in the way that the folk clubs in London are either sort of commercialised versions of what they were, or there's something else altogether now.
Yeah, it's something the troubadour in Earl's Court, and that's always turning up in books about Bert Janssen and whatever, and I was going, wow, and then I realised that it's a stand-up venue now. It's still called the Troubadour, and I've played it dozens of times, and it's not much bigger than this little room we're in now, but You don't have. There's no plaques there. There isn't any. No one's put anything up saying Bob Dylan performed here, 1964 or whatever. And it's sort of in. Whereas in New York, they are a bit more conscious around there of this is a historical area. But the Cafe Wah or whatever, it's just. It's kind of just tribute nights and that sort of thing. It's not.
Yeah,
they haven't.
Yeah.
They don't hold on to it.
Yeah.
What's your next work going to be about? Your next book?
I'm doing something on unusual musical instruments in pop music, and I say pop music in the very broadest sense. So it'll be an A to Z, covering about 50 years, and just any funny old things that have turned up on records. I'm going to do something about. I'm also going to do a CD with it to demonstrate as many of the instruments as I can get hold of.
Oh right, that'd be good.
I think it could be fun. Yeah, I mean they're all. Although you might think that that sort of thing would be more associated with obscure artists, actually an awful lot of very mainstream artists turn up with all sorts of funny things.
What's the greatest intersection of the most mainstream artists using the weirdest instrument?
Well, I'd have to leave aside the Beatles, but there's one very funny one. There's an instrument called a glass harmonica, which is basically various different glass vessels filled with different amounts of water that you hit and stroke, and they give different tones. And that features on an Aerosmith album from the mid-90s. So I think that's the strangest one.
So you think there'll be a knock-on effect in the same way as After American Troubadours? Lots of your American Troubadours are available on CD reissue, expecting to see the music shops of Denmark Street filled with people trying to play Stairway to Heaven on the glass harmonica.
It'd be nice to think so, yeah. And Ons Martineau reissues and stuff like that. It's an early electronic instrument that Radiohead used. Yeah, that would be nice to think so, wouldn't it?
Let's hear a final thing from the American Troubadour selection. What are we going to hear now?
This is a track by David Blue called These 23 Days in September. David Blue started off as the most blatant Dylan copyist there was, but this is from his second album. He'd start to evolve his own voice a bit. I think this is a good track.
All right, let's hear this.
That surrounds her out on the floor alone. The harmony or rhythm interrupts the style she shows. There it is, it catches her. She does a little dance, holding herself as if it was by chance. Oh, Hannah, I know it's been so long. She twirls her white robe, follows the beat she controls. On one or all she rolls, taking time only to give us a little pose. Bowing to her suitors with a smile, she says, come see me once in a while. Down like a stove. Outside a driver waits to take her home. There he is, smoking a cigarette, while she's inside getting what she hasn't got yet. Oh, Anna, I know it's been so long. For all of us to see, as long as she stays on. The captains in the line rehearse their hungry songs. Piecing together, they hope are the proper words, which in turn, when spoken, come off absurd. Oh, I know it's been so long. Hey, I know.
That was David Blue.
Yeah.
We played the wrong side there, it doesn't matter.
We did,
what was that called?
That was called Ambitious Anna.
Well, can you tell us about that, given that you weren't expecting it?
I can't tell you a thing about that song at all, actually. I don't know anything about it. But I can tell you that David Blue gave up being a musician in 1976 because he wasn't selling any records and became an actor. And there's a film called The Lonely Ordeal of Patty Hearst, which is always shown about twice a year on late night TV. And David Blue is a detective constable in that, so look out for it.
Is he called David Blue?
No, he's called Inspector
Constable. What's his acting name?
His acting name, that's interesting. Sometimes it's David Blue, but his real name is Stuart David Cohen.
Yeah.
And he actually made one album under that name as well.
But there was the David Cohen in Country Joe and the Fish as well, and so he probably had to not be called the same thing.
Yes, that's right. And funnily enough, some rock encyclopedias I've noticed think that David Cohen in Country Joe and the Fish is the same as that person as David Blue, but that's just not true.
Did you interview him, did you?
No.
Because he died.
He died in 1982, jogging in Washington Park, and his body wasn't identified for 3 days, sadly, because he was just in jogging gear, had no ID on him, and he just lay in a morgue, rather tragically, for 3 days.
I love that first David Blue album. I mean, you say he's a desperate Dylan Connor copyist, but there's this mad energy to it that it's kind of got it's really got its own thing, hasn't it?
Yeah, that I think that's the most out of tune record ever released on a major album, and it has a charm to it, and some nice songs actually that he re-recorded on later albums. I find it a little bit hard going, but it's an entertaining thing. It's a great period piece.
All right, as a reward for going over the old ground of your book here on Resonance 104.4 FM, Mark, you could play the track of your own choice, and what is it?
It's Know Your Product by The Saints from their second album, my favourite punk era song of all time.
Here we are, then, Know Your Product by The Saints.
We'll be right back. it was like talking to a vision of a younger version before gravity and breath left their tag on the concrete wall of your face. You've grown small. That was me with my montage energy and the swan on the lake. Two people in the box with a combination lock, and in that frozen past, a hollow plaster cast. That was me with my montage elegy and the swan on the lake. To terror, walk into it, put my all to a crack in the wailing wall. That was me with my montage elegy and the swan on the lake. Two people in her way.
That was Two People by Farina, which is Mark Brenn's current band. You've got a new album in the on the go?
Yeah, it's proceeding at a snail's pace. Should be out next year sometime, we hope.
And on the same label, on Pickled Egg of Leicester?
Possibly not, no. I don't know who it'll be on. Maybe.
Oh, right. That hangs in the balance.
It does.
It's good to leave people on a cliffhanger. Will the next Farina album be on Pickled Egg from Leicester or a different label?
It's going to be endlessly debated, isn't it?
Thanks for coming in and talking about all that stuff. That was really great. Cheers.
Good. Thanks very much.
Best of luck with the instruments book.
Cheers.
We're going to have a fairly substantial piece of music now. This is from Tim Byrne, the American saxophonist. And this is from his new live album, which is called The Sublime. And he's in the London Jazz Festival on the 22nd of November. Let me just check that. I don't want to give wrong information. No, it's the 21st. Imagine if you'd gone mistakenly. Anyway, this is called Van Grundy's Retreat. Baby School Freakout, which is one of my 10 favourite records of all time. It's just been reissued on CD from about 1983. Actually, I'm going to read a lovely bit of the exciting sleeve notes here, if I can find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. It makes it sound so romantic. Something about... Oh, bloody hell. I can't find it. But imagine if I had done, how interesting it would have been. Because, of course, on the vinyl, sleeve notes are in a different place. On the CD, I can't find them. There's all these strange little shapes. You know, Raymond Baxter on Tomorrow's World told us CDs would improve the quality of our life 20 years ago. Was he right? The jury's still out. And before that, Tim Byrne, who's that was his new group, Science Fiction Band, and they'll be in the London Jazz Festival on the 21st of November alongside a load of boring things. And we've been joined by Mark Beasley from the group Rothko. Hello.
Hi, Stuart.
Thanks for coming in.
It's a real pleasure.
I'll tell you what, before we speak to you any length about your work, let's give the Resonance 104.4 FM listener a taste of it. This is from the live album. What was it called?
Not Gone, Not Forgotten.
And this is called End. That was Rothko, and that was called End. And there's some ambient noise coming up from downstairs, if any of the listeners can hear that. That's because we're Resonance 104.4 FM, Community Arts Radio, and there's a man downstairs letting someone in who's delivering a tape or something. It is live as it happens. What can you tell us about that track, Mark?
Well, that was actually an amalgamation of about three different gigs. I put out a request for people to send us sort of live recordings.
Oh, like bootlegs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got quite a few in, some really good quality ones as well from the people that already knew very well, you know.
That's good, let the public do the work for you.
Well, I never recorded any live shows at all. I just wasn't into the idea. But I was surprised at the quality of the sound and everything that we got.
And did you listen to them and go, hey, these guys are great?
I thought, blimey, the sound quality is really good on some of these recordings, you know. And I just managed to, and I put the whole album together. And a lot of the tracks, like I say, are sort of, they're like recordings from two or three different gigs. And I just sort of edit them together sort of thing. And that's the case with that track.
Well, the first time I ever saw you was about, we're in Denmark Street now at the Resonance 104.4 FM. What would you call this? An office, a studio, a room? I don't know. Anyway, you did that gig underneath the Helter Skelter bookshop.
That's right.
I'd never seen the band. I'd heard it, but I didn't realise the incredible visual impact of just three bass guitarists in a line when you were doing those.
Right.
When it was an incredible thing to look at, and it was kind of a lot of ambient music like that, or whatever you'd want to call it, where you kind of think it's not going to be a dynamic live performance, but it was just an incredible thing to see.
We were a very physical band.
Yeah.
Gargoyles to look at, but a very physical sound, you know. And there were good times. That was a cracking night, actually. That was a fantastic, fantastic night down there. The place was there. It was an incredible, incredible show.
What are you, if you perform live now, then, what's the setup?
It's myself on bass, funnily enough, Michael Donnelly on bass guitar, and Francis Morgan, who plays violin. So we're out as a trio at the moment. But since the original bass trio split up, there's been a multitude of people involved, namely all the musicians from the group Delicate AWOL. And we've gone out as a bass, flute and vocals. I've done some solo stuff just on my own. Bass duo with me and Michael. It's been a lot of different ways of presenting the music, and it's been really liberating.
Where was the point years back where you thought, I know, I'll centre all this around the bass guitar, which isn't considerably... isn't genuinely considered the lead instrument of anything?
It just really happened. There was no plan. I thought we'd do a couple of gigs and then split up. I didn't think there'd be any grand thing that would ever occur from it. I was just doing some recordings just on four track, just using the bass because I can't play anything else. And it just sort of happened. So someone offered us a gig. It was Nigel Adams, actually, who runs Narwhal Recordings. And then I thought I'd better put a band together, you know, or try to. And then just happened that it was all bass players. It was really no sort of grand plan or scheme or anything. I didn't know what was going on musically anyway, because I'd hardly ever listened to music anyway at all.
Right.
So for me, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary, shall we say, you know.
When you say you hardly ever listen to music, is that a conscious choice, or is it just you don't have time or whatever?
I don't know. Over the years, I've just stopped listening, I think. Some things grab my attention. But there's, you know, I got so depressed on that when we first started on the gigs, going, you know, doing the gigs on the gig circuit, just like, you know, the London stuff, and I just got, you know, mortally depressed by all the sort of what was out there, you know, and I hated being associated with certain things.
Have you ever come across a guy called David Jackman who does a group called Organum?
I haven't.
Well, they're all kind of that sort of cymbal drones, you know, like bowed things.
Oh, right.
Bowed, and He goes out of his way to avoid exposure to any other music, to the point where if he's in a supermarket and there's background music, he'll just leave or whatever. And I really admire that, because I kind of think, you know, you sort of, if you've got a sound in your head, you presumably don't want it contaminated up to a point.
I don't know if it's that, but yeah, I mean, I have left buildings where there's, in fact, some buildings I won't go into where there's music playing.
Right.
Specifically in the West End.
Yeah.
It's just really aggressive, and it's just, you know, it's horrible. But I don't know, I mean, I do, you know, people send me stuff, and I've genuinely really liked some music that I've heard recently. You know, in fact, I love it. But there just isn't much, you know, there's just not much out there that I would say, yeah, this is terrific. I like a lot of old, you know, early recording. I mean, I'm quite a big jazz. The older I've got more into sort of jazz and stuff.
Yeah.
Not so much the sort of maybe traditional stuff, but... Yeah, there's some recordings from the 70s and stuff which are sort of more adventurous than what a lot of kids are doing today, you know.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with it.
Do you think that's a logical endpoint? If you listen to lots of music or play lots of music, basically, in your 30s, you will end up a jazz fan.
I don't know. It's something, when I was younger, I always wanted to like it, but didn't.
Yeah.
Because I thought I should, but yeah. I didn't. I just didn't like it.
No, I remember having a sense that it was good. But it's interesting, actually, because when I was a teenager, I didn't like jazz or musical theatre, music, you know, like show tunes and stuff. And you everyone would go, oh, they're marvellous. And now I really love loads of jazz. But working tangentially as I now do in the world of musical theatre, doing this opera thing, I still absolutely hate musical theatre. And I'm wondering, where will be the point where I see the beauty of a Rodgers and Hammerstein score? Don't think it's ever going to happen, actually.
No, fair enough.
Let's have a listen to something else. This is from the last album, the album before the new one. What's it called?
A Continual Search for Origins.
And this is the first track?
It's called On the Day We Said Goodbye.
This is Rothko.
overwhelmed by pain. I'm shaking with the heat of my need again. Starts in my feet, reverbs up to my brain. There's nothing I can do to revert the gain. I'm looking down to the street below. There's nothing in the way they move to show. They too know what I know. They too hunger for the beast below. Listening to the radio, I feel so out of place. There's a certain something missing that the treble can't erase. I know you can tell just by looking at my face. A word about my weakness, I'm totally addicted to bass. Wow, wow.
Totally addicted to bass. You're addicted to bass, Mark. That's a pure tone, the Australian football. I'm addicted to bass. And what was the track before that? That was a collaboration with members of Delicate Able.
It was indeed, yeah, Caroline Ross on vocals there, yeah. Beautiful.
And we'll play a bit off your new album later, because that was you collaborating with Bear.
Black with Bear, otherwise known as Jim Adams.
An American sound artist, so we'll come back to that. But we also said, bring in some stuff you like. And you've chosen...
Gary Peacock.
Yeah.
And Ralph Towner.
Track 6.
Track from St. Helens.
Gary Peacock and Ralph Towner's Oracle album. We were talking about about One's Inevitable Drift to Jazz. Mm. Here's an example of that. What do you know about Gary Peacock, who's double bass here?
Not a great deal. I mean, I read an interview with him some time ago, about maybe 10 or 11 years ago, 10 years ago maybe. And I thought he just spoke a lot of sense, you know. And I immediately went out and bought one of his records.
Right.
Which was that one, Oracle. And I've just been in love with his stuff ever since.
Okay, here's a little bit of Gary Peacock and Ralph Towner from the album Oracle, and this is called St. Helens.
Thank you.
That was Rothko with, what do you call the guy?
Black with Bear.
Black with Bear, and that's from the new album, Wish for a World Without Her, which you described on the sleeve notes as a response to the events of September the 11th. Does he lives in New York, does he?
Lives in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And how did the notion that you should do something about that come about?
It's a bit of a tricky subject. Jim, we've been in contact for a couple of years now, and when it all happens, you know, we start, you know, your thoughts and discussions, you know, sort of graduate towards pretty momentous events like that, especially yeah. as he was local there. And the more we talked about it, the more I started thinking about it and what, you know, the notion of sort of that sort of attack means to all of us. I mean, I grew up being evacuated from Catholic school on a fairly regular basis.
Where was that?
In Hatfield, in Hertfordshire.
Right.
You know, because of bomb threats and stuff, yeah. and it became a regular pretty much occurrence, you know. And it sort of brought those, you know, those some of those memories back to me, which weren't particularly pleasant. And we just sort of, you know, started sharing ideas and thoughts, and some of these things were pretty depressing, to be honest, and upsetting. And it made me start to think about, you know, why am I making music? You know, it made me really question why I was doing anything. You know, why certain, you know, even down to titles, and the titles for this record are very important to me.
Yeah.
That's when I came up with those four, you know, the titles for the
But it is the sort of
tracks.
Thing that anything banal suddenly seems more banal when something like that has happened.
Absolutely.
And you feel like you've got to, you feel like if you're taking up people's time by putting something out into the environment, it needs to be more valuable, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I'd question every other thing that I'd ever done. You know, why have I done that? And with this record in particular, it actually grew over a whole year. It wasn't just like, you know, done. It was like we were, you know, discussing things over the internet for quite some time. And as we discussed more and more, and, you know, learnt more and more about each other, I suppose, you know, other things came into play, and they influenced the music in a great way, in a very, very deep way. And
is it in that partnership? I mean, you know, knowing you, I don't know any of Jim Adams' work.
No,
but I mean, I know yours, and it seemed like there's more kind of dissonance in that. Is that his input?
Not all the time.
The interference and just the stuff for kind of cracking
not,
up.
Not all the time, but no. Yeah, on the whole, yes. And that's a lot. That's some of the things I love about his music and the way he puts things together. You know, he can create the sounds that I would like to create but can't. I don't know how to do it,
right?
And he had the skills, you know, to do that. And for me, it was perfect to be able to work with someone who's producing that music.
That album was made by sort of file sharing, was it?
More or less.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the four tracks of, you know, "Wish for a World Without Her," "Declaration of Loss," "Treasure of Memories," and I forget the name of the other track. But they, you know, I'd already recorded those, but I re-edited them, sent them to him in like file form. And he manipulated them and sent them back to me, and then I did a bit of work extra on them. It was a great way to work, because we were always talking about it. You know, we were, you know, in pretty much instant communication most of the time. It was a great way of working, and it was a real pleasure to work with him.
Good way of working with someone who isn't there, I suppose.
Terrific, you know, and you know the mail system is pretty good. So, you know, I was sending him CDs of tracks I'd worked on, vice versa.
Yeah.
So it was only like 4 or 5 days apart. You know, we were getting, you know, positive, you know, feedback from each other. And it was actually a lot quicker than working with a band, to be honest with you.
Are you going to work with him again?
I really hope so.
Right. And this was out on your label?
My first release on my own label, Trace Recordings.
On Trace Recordings. Actually, tell everyone the website address.
It's just, I haven't got a website for the label, it's just my own sort of the rothkomusic.co.uk.
rothkomusic.co.uk.
That's, you know, I've got a, you know, that's where I put my information up, basically.
You can track it down there. Let's do another and less considered response to September the 11th. This is Alan Jackson from the album Greatest Hits 2.
Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? You in the yard with your wife and children, working on some stage in L.A. Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor? Or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones? Pray for the ones who don't know. Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue and the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer and look at yourself and what really matters? I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love. Where were you when the...
Who's that, Mark?
That was Chandan Narayan. He's from Ann Arbor, Michigan in the USA. He's been sending me a couple of his CDR-only releases, which I think are absolutely fantastic. Some of the best things I've heard in a very, very long time.
Was that something you'd put out if you could on your...
If I could, I would put it out tomorrow.
And are you sort of part of a global community of people working in your sort of... in your way that swap ideas now, then, do you think?
I would like to think so, yeah. I really would like to think that's true, yeah. I'm not, you know... The longer I do this, the more I find out... You know, I live in a less of a bubble, I suppose, you know, my own music, you know, the more time goes on, the more I become in contact with people, but, you know, and it's great to be able to sort of communicate with people all over the world, you know, via the internet.
And is it in that sort of... You're playing on Tuesday?
Playing on Tuesday.
Yeah, so who's in the lineup on Tuesday?
It's myself on bass, Michael Donnelly on bass, and Francis Morgan on violin. It's the first gig since April, and we're playing a couple of tracks off the new album.
Where's that at?
It's at the Arts Cafe, Aldgate East.
Arts Cafe, Aldgate East. Yep. What time does it start?
It's doors at 8 o'clock. We're on at 10 to 10. 21:50 UK time.
So it's a Rothko two basses and violin.
That's right.
Set up on Tuesday at the Arts Cafe in Aldgate East, and they'll be on at 10 to 10. There's two other bands on before.
There's a band called Kelman and a band called Moley. Unfortunately, I don't know anything about them.
You don't have to.
I feel I should.
But you can go and see them.
I'm sure I will not when I meet them on Tuesday.
Then you'll be able to say what they like. You know, we can't give information about everything, but there's some other stuff on as well on Tuesday before. Might be all right. We're going to hear something else by another lone recording artist, then we'll come back and hear a bit more of Mark's music. This is from a new album by Yandek, who I think's made about 24 albums since the late 70s, most of which are him accompanying himself on guitar in such a fashion as to suggest that he either is genuinely entirely untutored or a genius. And it's right on the edge where you can't tell. One of his albums that I've got is unaccompanied vocals, but this one is him with occasional instruments. This is a track called The Answer from Yandek's new album, The Place.
I heard the bell ring. I wondered who was there. There was an orange sky behind the mountain. Just a silhouette of a horizon. And then I was in the car. Looking out the back window, then I saw the nose and eyes. Closed on that ancient face. And the corner of the post. And the cut glass chandelier. A flashlight looked at me. Couldn't even see the hand. The side of the wall had two windows. Green light shone through them. Maybe an ear. And a touch of hair. Somebody's at the door. But it's so hard to see. Imagination's taking over me. I got geometric patterns. There's lightning bolts and shafts of vapor. And a long coat in the haze. They're waiting for me to come and see them. But I keep imagining it's not there. It's back in the black and the red and the yellow. And the storms and the arrows. And hieroglyphics. can find out who you are. I can think about the stairs.
Well, that was that. That was The Answer by Yandek. And that is what it is. You can't really, there's not much point saying anything about that. You can't really compare it to anything else or say whether it's good or bad. It simply exists and can be found from Coolwood Industries label, P.O. Box 15375, Houston, Texas 77220, USA. And prolonged exposure to Yandek, I suspect, would make you bewildered and confused, but in my professional capacity as a reviewer for a right-wing Sunday arts supplement, I have exposed myself to that, and I'd recommend it to anyone who feels like they want to be rewired and disorientated. Mark, thanks for coming in and talking about Rothko. Like I say, you've got a gig on Tuesday at the Arts Cafe in Aldgate East. That's attached to Toynbee Hall, isn't it?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, where a philosopher used to lecture at some point. You kindly brought in an unreleased bit of Rothko.
Brand new. Unreleased.
Where will we see it, if ever?
Probably nowhere, ever.
You're going through a professional crisis about how to release music.
I am.
Everyone reaches that point. And you must push through it, because it would be a shame to not hear any more of this. But thanks for coming in.
It's been a pleasure, Stuart. Thank you.
This is called A Trilogy.
It is. Thank you.
That was an unreleased track from Rothko called A Trilogy, and Mark's been with us for the last hour from Rothko, and they're playing at the Arts Cafe on Oldgate East on Tuesday. You've been listening to Stuart Lee on Single Parent One Way Family Favourites on Resonance 104.4 FM. Coming up after me is Calling All Pensioners, Harry Howard's Pensioners' Rights Activist Programme. Tonight at 6 o'clock, Sound Poets Exposed, Clive Graham with an hour of sound poetry from his archives. And I'm going to turn over and... Oh, yeah, tomorrow, 3.30, my friend Simon Munnery's on for an hour doing his show, which is called Experimental Half Hour. Each week I mention this and point out, of course, the joke there is in the title. It's an hour, but Simon's called it an experimental half hour. And I'll be back next week, actually, when I'm joined by my former comedy double act partner, Richard Keith Herring, who has just had a one-man show that he wrote about the cultural history of the penis, translated into Finnish, Norwegian and Italian, and performed in all those different countries. And then and the second half of the show next week, 2nd of November, the comedian, bearded comedian, Daniel Kitson will be in, who's doing his one-man short story show at the Soho Theatre the following week. So tune in then, and if you're old or interested in what pensioners are angry about, then stay with us for Calling All Pensioners as well, which is on at immediately after me. Now, loads of people have been talking about the television reissues and saying the second television album isn't as good as the first. They're right, it isn't. But a lot of those tracks got really good when they were played live, as the recent limited edition 5000 Live at the Old Waldorf San Francisco 6th of the 29th 1978 shows. You can get it from Rhino Records website. See you next time. This is Ain't That Nothin'.